Blog Talk Radio.
The All About You show is brought to you in part by Vera Heart Coaching and Mindscape, the art of transformation.
Hello and welcome to the Thursday edition of the All About You show. This is Karen Sullivan, your host for the show, and tonight my special guest is author Aubrey Simmons, whose book Self-Thought Abuse is a book that everybody should have. And Aubrey, are you on the phone with me? Oh, where's my Aubs? I know she's in. There she is. How are
Hello.
You, Aubrey?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I read this book, and I absolutely love it, and I think this is a book, your book, Self-Thought Abuse, is one that every household needs to not only learn individually how they keep, you know, recreating the struggle that they are in, and unable to break the chains, but also as a couple, and also to help their children grow to be strong and independent adults. So let's talk a little bit about self-thought abuse. How did this book come to life?
Well, this book is based on my own personal experience and my journey through my own self-thought abuse, which began about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, actually. Throughout high school, and even as a child, you know, looking back, I had a wonderful childhood, you know, and I, you know, not many can say the same. You know, everybody has a unique situation. I had a wonderful upbringing, have wonderful parents, very supportive, but as most people know, that they struggle in school. You know, kids are just not nice. And, you know, through those struggles, I started to believe what others would tell me. You know, someone would tell me, you know, you're ugly, or, you know, you're stupid. Just those small little words that, you know, I would listen to. And in my younger years, I would basically, I was able to say, no, that's not me, because all that confidence is there, that so close to source, just that freedom and that innocence was there. Well, as I got older into high school, the abuse towards myself, and I can't really at this point say that anybody technically abused me. I was the abuser. And that's what self-thought abuse is. It's when you abuse yourself through your own thought process by the perception you have from what other people tell you. So what that means is that everybody throughout my past, anything that they have said, I took that in and believed that, created my own identity, which evolved into a very self-abusive pattern, which led to a lot of unhappiness, a lot of relationship struggles, a lot of arguments, a lot of self-doubt. It held me back. It created a codependent environment. It was just so self-destructive. And my husband, he went into the military, and for 15 months he was gone. And it was quite a shock, because he originally was supposed to take us along. Now, I don't know about you or the rest of the world, but in 2008 and 2009, the economy was just horrible and trying to find a job. Well, my husband and I, we lost our job within 3 months of each other and lost everything. We were pretty much homeless. So we were kind of vagabonds and, you know, going from friend's house to friend's house. And then eventually I moved in with my parents and he was in another state. And then he joined the military. So we went through that pattern for 2 years, and went through that struggle, went through that identity crisis for myself, as far as, you know, where am I in my life? How could this have happened? And then he received orders and was gone for 15 months. And I was all alone. And I did not do well at first with this, but then I went on my own little self journey. I did not want to feel this way anymore. And I was going to college at the time, and I was taking business courses and then a psychology course. And it wasn't until my speech class where I had to write my own obituary that I realized how messed up I was, because I couldn't say a single nice thing about me. And being all alone and, you know, like many, I went and I saw a counselor, I saw a psychologist, and I was talking, and they never made me feel any better. They gave me a set of tools to work from, but none of them seemed to work. So what I did was I took the business process, which is a root cause analysis and value stream mapping, basically, with a time-phased approach. And I incorporated that into a psychological aspect for myself. And what I did was I mapped out my entire life from the beginning and discovered my own root. And through my journey, I would write and observe others around me, observe what I was going through. And for the last 4 years, I've been compiling all of the information that I've learned and completely have changed my life. It took about 2 years working through the process that I created. And after the 2 years of working through, I finally can say I have this giant weight off my back. Anybody can say pretty much anything to me, and I will not react in the same way anymore. I have found a way to rewire my thought process. And that is what this book is about. It's about rewiring your thoughts to allow yourself to be you, have your own identity again, and not live in somebody else's belief set.
Right. As not allowing somebody else's opinion of you to matter more than your opinion of yourself. And
correct.
It takes a very, very strong will to overcome all of that to reach the height that you've reached in 2 years, you know, because that is no easy task, especially with your husband being gone for 15 months and you have two children and raising the kids on your own. And I'm sure he was going through similar situation mental-wise, would you say?
Yes, and in fact, you know, this is not just specific to women. This is a universal process that I think we do as humans. We internalize, and I think we have that connection with our society that it's not only a competitive society, but it's also where do I belong? We have this unbelievable urge to belong to something. And if we're taken down a path that says that we don't belong, we push ourselves to alter our identities, ideas, and who we ultimately are so that we do belong, which leads to the unhappiness, to the you know, the negative thinking. And it's funny, you know, most of the time you're not even aware that you do it. And that was the hardest thing to recognize. And I do have a step in my book that goes through, you know, how to recognize, first of all, recognizing it, how to stop it, and then reprogramming.
Right. Right, right. So with that being said, when you are first aware of, well, actually, I want to go back to the fitting in first, because I think that starts in childhood, right?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
you don't feel like you fit anywhere, different clothes maybe, or you don't come from a wealthy family, or your parents are separated or divorced, or, you know, and you're just different, and you don't feel like everybody else, you know, with my little air quotes going. And so you do what you can to alter your personality. It's like learned behavior at a very, very early age to try and fit into some ideal that society says this is how you should dress, or this is how you should behave, or this is how you should look, or, you know, whatever. So would you agree with that statement, that it starts very young?
I would. And yes. I call those rules in my book. And yes, it comes from childhood, but the part that most aren't recognizing as adults is that if you look through your past, half of us, we can't remember our day-to-day as a child, but we sure as heck can remember and into adulthood certain things that have, you know, either hurt us or shifted the way that we think.
Sure.
Because we're at a different conscious level. So as a child, when you're starting to form these belief sets, so if a parent is saying, no, don't do this, don't do this, that's shutting off their creativity. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I mean, I'm a parent, you're a parent. You do those things because you're protective of your child, and you try to move them in a direction, but that perception of that child could be, they don't love me. Or, you know, if you have a divorce situation, well, they broke up because of me, because of my behavior, even if it wasn't because of some word at some point they either overheard or, you know, they were witness to. So in that observation, it goes into like this data bank in the back of the subconscious, and it sits there, and then it's that validation of, I've seen this before, I've been here before, it must be, and it's not. It's a false perception of reality, and it's not present time.
Because when you're young, you don't have the tools that you develop with experience, you know. When you're young, your whole world evolves around you, which it should even as an adult. But, you know, when you're a kid, it is very difficult to deal with, say, verbal abuse or emotional abuse or divorced parents or bullies in school and those kinds of things, because there's nothing in your toolbox at that point in time to help you recognize that what's happening is wrong, and so you accept it as truth because you have nothing else to compare it to.
Right. Well, I think
it's also the
belief set of somebody saying something to a child, and like you said, not having the tools in their toolbox, but it's so important for at a young age to recognize it's not about you. That's not about you. If somebody says something to you, that's not about you. That's about them. That is a outcry of something. Either they're angry about something, they're outlashing. For goodness sake, they're human. You know, people say wrong things all the time. But if you believe that and you say, that is me, that's where you go wrong. And that's where I know with my children now, since I've gone, you know, through this myself, every time they come to me and they say, you know, this person's being mean at school. And I said, well, you know, you listen to the whole situation and you say, well, how did you handle that? And you listen to their side, but you can see how much they internalized it and just put it onto themselves. Like, I'm a horrible person. And to see an 8-year-old do that to themselves, you go, oh, my gosh, you can't do that. That's not about you. You know, you have to put that back onto that person. It goes back to that old saying, I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say sticks back onto you. That is the best thing. Everybody knows that. But we have never really applied that.
Right.
And, you know, from a psychological standpoint, from a thought process, and that is.
Well, it looks like we just lost Aubrey. I know that there are high winds here, high winds there. Let's see if we can get her back on again. I hear the phone ringing. We are here in Illinois. We are having some just tremendous wind, and which could be interrupting our program tonight. And I know with her as well, the winds are coming from where she's at, so they may be experiencing very similar weather pattern. But we'll keep trying to get her back. But her book is Self-Thought Abuse. Aubrey, do I have you now?
Oh, hello. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah. Well, I was just explaining. I'm not sure about your weather there, but we're having some horrific wind, you know. And
oh,
I thought
are
it
you?
Was coming. Yeah. I don't know if it came out of your way yesterday and we're getting it today or if you still have it.
We had quite the weather yesterday.
Yeah, we're getting like 40-mile-an-hour winds today, so I apologize.
Oh, that will knock out. No, that's
yeah,
quite all right.
You know, but to tag along onto what you were just saying, I have one who's going to be 12 next week, actually, believe it or not. And those 12 years flew by. And, you know, so in sixth grade, you know, hormones are raging. Testosterone is raging, and you just get to this era of, you know, what it's like to be a tween again, and kids are mean, you know, and he had a situation last week with a bully, and I asked him how he handled it, and he told him to not do it again, and that was the end of that. And I said, well, I said, good for you, you know. I said, because, you know, you never understand what someone else is going through. And sadly, you know, you are just the one that caught him at that time, and he needed, you know, an outlet to express himself. And I'm sorry it wasn't, you know, a pleasant expression, but continue to be a leader and not allow somebody else to dictate to you how you feel about yourself, because you are wonderful. You have a great sense of humor. You're very charismatic. You know, all of these things that Dylan is. And, you know, so trying to not allow what happened be the catalyst for a bad day or a bad weekend, and work through it right at that point. And that seems to work with him. I tell him, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, what somebody else says or does. You know, because if they're saying it about you, they are really, really talking about themselves, because we're all mirrors from one another.
Right.
So, you know,
you know, when it gets difficult, though, it gets difficult.
Pardon me?
I said it gets difficult, though, when you have one person saying it to you, and then 2 weeks later, a completely different person says it to you, and then a month later, somebody else says the same thing to you. And that is the hardest one to overcome, because you have three different individuals saying the same thing, and that's when the programming begins. It's not generally when one person says it and you deflect it and was like, that's not me. You go away. This is not in my space. But then when another person comes, and, well, that person in the past said that, oh, that's interesting. No, that's not me, and you're pushing it away again. But the more it occurs throughout as you're growing up and you hear that, it becomes trigger points. And
well, I think that's very, very true, and I don't disagree with what you said. But when children start learning the first time and the second time and the third time, And the more they keep hearing the reinforcement from home that it is not about them, it's about the other person, the more they begin to understand and not allow their confidence to be taken over by, you know, the opinion of someone else. You know, now this, you know, he's, we moved to a new area. He started going to a new school at fourth grade, so the cliques are already in play, you know, and it was difficult, you know, for as nice of a kid as he is, it was difficult. And he had a very, very hard, you know, fourth grade, but it got easier in fifth grade. And in sixth grade, it is even easier, even though the school that he goes to is 6 through 12, right? So he'll be going
right
here through graduation of high school. So he has a, he does have a very solid core of who he is, but that started a long time ago. This is not the first time that he heard that that message. So it's easier for him to recall it and try and be a more of a friend to the person that's hurting than he is by being hurt what the person is saying. You know,
Absolutely.
I was just using that one as just as an example of a conversation, you know, and he you know, so he reaches out rather than recoils.
And that's from the style of parenting, you having the knowledge and you passing that knowledge on. And that is so critical for that reinforcement, which, you know, when I was growing up, I received that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But,
exactly.
You know, as I got older and started to, you know, in that tween years, I could have taken on the world. I was so confident. But as I got older, I still had that confidence. I had an event in high school that was very earth-shattering for me, and it ripped my life force out, basically. A gentleman that I was dating at the time, he, you know, once you get into that age, you become sexually active, and things happen, but I happen to have a condition to where I would, you know, have an episode where I'd bleed. Well, I ended up having one of those on his bed and ran into the bathroom, and he was having a party. I was in the bathtub, and he actually pulled me out of the bathtub and rubbed my face in my own blood as they're laughing at me and throwing things at me. And this went on for a couple hours, you know, and I'm naked, you know, and I'm very vulnerable. And from that point, you know, I didn't really have anybody to go to because I was not sure exactly what had happened to me. So I went from a completely and utterly confident person to somebody who didn't even know who they were anymore. And how could I put myself in that situation, and that self-blame and blaming him and trying to get that justification that I was okay. In a lot of abusive relationships, you
tell
tend
me
to,
his name off air, I'm going to go Rochambeau him.
No, it gets so much worse. It gets so much worse. But
I'll Rochambeau him twice.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, it's amazing because actually I never told anybody that story until 2010. So I held on to it for a good 10 years before I even squeaked it. And when I did, it was a very emotional. My body literally went into convulsions, and I struggled with it. And now I can talk freely about it because that was my root that caused my downfall of my own self-thought abuse. So having those sort of parents, a tragic event can shake you to the point where you don't know who you are anymore. And that's exactly what had happened to me. And going through that, in many people who tend to be in an abusive relationship, I completely understand, because you're trying to validate that you're a good person, that you can figure out why this person is being so mean to you. Because after all of that, I stayed with this guy until he actually broke up with me. And this was only, unfortunately, you know, it was such a, it was 3 months. It should have been, you know, the second I even, the first time he called me a name, I should have been out of there because of my confidence. But I was so curious. Why would you say that about somebody as cool as me, you know, kind of thing? But then it just went from 0 to 60, and, you know, we ended up being at this frat party or whatever, and he ended up, and this is the, you know, I think what the pivot point for me was in just saying, I don't even know who I am anymore because of the visual, the pain that I felt. He actually went into another room and had the sex with another woman right in front of me, and then after he was done, he walked up to me and said, that's how you do it. And I was at that point, I was just like, I want to die, you know, and I was extremely suicidal. And I didn't, again, you know, I'm like, I don't have a car. This guy I put all my faith into, you know, like a complete crazy person, and I'm just this empty shell. And it became very codependent on, I became extremely codependent on my mother. I leaned on her, even though I didn't tell her what was going on. But it's almost like I was doing anything to make my mom happy, and became very intertwined. And from that, it started spinning into this whole different whirlwind of, you know, emotional abuse for myself. But completely voiding out. But I still had empathy for other people, you know. But then I started spinning lies. I would, you know, anything to make my mother happy at that point. So if it meant I train wrecked every other relationship I had just to have her, because my mother has been, in a sense, my rock. She was always the person that I knew would never, ever leave me. And I grabbed onto that because that's all I had. And she was not aware of it at the time of how dysfunctional I was, because I never told the truth. And that I learned is that even in a relationship after that, you carry that and you have your triggers. And you say, you know what, that happened. If my husband's voice at that time would have been in a certain tone, I would close down and be like, nope, this is it. This is going to happen again. And then I'd start a fight. And I'd be like, no, and you can't do this. And I wouldn't express in that moment what I truly felt, so I masked that feeling. And then 2 weeks later, it'd come out in a different demon. And then I didn't express it truly then. So these lies within me kept mounting. And he's like, what is wrong with you, you know? And then we'd fight. And then I didn't even know what we were fighting about or even how I felt. And It turns into this monster that you don't really even know where it began after a certain time. And because your present time, you're aware of your present time, but you're living in your past constantly. And I wasn't thinking about those events. In fact, you literally block them out, and in my process is where I dug them back out and went, oh my gosh, I have been carrying this with me for how long? And then I was really hating myself, and I go, oh my gosh, what have I done, you know? And it was this true awakening that was, one, empowering, and at the same time I was at my lowest low. But I said, you know what, no, I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be right here right now, because I don't want to feel this way anymore. Now, so kind of through that is where, you know, a lot of this came about. But, you know, I used to get these gut blows. And, I mean, I would get a gut blow and then I'd cry. And, you know, it was like something I thought of on my own, you know, or he would say something in a tone and then I'd just start crying for no reason. Or I would beg for his attention. Mm-hmm. And ever since I've gone through this, I can honestly say I have not had one of those gut blows. I am to the point where it's like I know who I am. I regained my self-identity. I have forgiven myself, and I have learned a lot. And
right.
I know where I want to be. I know where I'm going, and I am truly free of any pain that I have caused myself, because that's what I've done. My pain
right.
is from me, because no matter what that man did to me to trigger this whole set of events, it only happened in that event. He is to blame for that one event, and yes, you can say that it happened, but it's my fault I carried it so far into my present, you know?
Right.
And that is where I drew the line in the sand, and I said, you know what, it's not his fault anymore. It's my fault, because I'm the one doing this. You know,
right.
I'm reliving this by choice.
Right.
And that was the defining moment of the healing process for me, and it was a lot of work. It was, and this type of process and this type of thinking, it really takes an individual to be very willing to go through and change
yes.
and recognize and take the time. This is a lifelong process that's ever changing.
Yes.
Always. You know,
yeah, we were talking about that the other day, you know,
yeah.
because other things will come up, you know, now that you're grounded and standing where you stand and living in this very ever-present moment, another deep, dark, buried tragedy will then, you know, something will just cause it. But the thing is, my belief is that when that happens, that you have expanded, you know, and I know the term toolbox is so overused, but, you know, it truly does fit. You have expanded, well, we'll put it like this. You've expanded your awareness of yourself and your awareness of where you are and who you are, so that when another episode, should it ever come up, you will know differently on how to get through it, and it won't take a 2-year process.
Right.
You
well,
know?
Not only that,
and
the, yeah, the
that
rebound's
happens.
Faster.
Right.
Rebound is faster. Yeah. And that is it. You still have emotions. You still get mad, still get upset, but the
sure.
rebound is lost. And that is truly what it is. If we didn't have feelings, we wouldn't be human.
That's right. You know, you have
yeah.
to own it, and but just because you're owning it doesn't mean that you need to give yourself permission to continually relive it. You can own
right.
it and say, yes, it happened, and yes, this is what I did, and yes, I've held on to it, and now it's time for me to let it go. And I know for a fact that how I've learned to let it go with my processes that not only work for me, but will work for thousands of people, that, you know, I always have the ability to get myself back to where I'm proud of myself, I love myself, and I can do anything, because you can do anything. You're an amazing writer. You're an amazing artist. You're an amazing photographer. There's so many creative qualities about you that, you know, could and probably do make others very envious of just your pure talent, and that's what it is with you. And it's not anything that you ever had to work at. These are honest to God gifts, your gift with words, your gift with drawing, your gift with your eye, with photography. I mean, it's phenomenal. And I was looking at your horse, the horse that you had drawn online.
Oh.
You drew the cover, I'm going to guess, for your book.
I did. That is,
yes.
They're actually, the cover for the book has an interesting story. It's a compilation of two of the paintings that I've done. And what I do is the society paintings. And one is a woman, and she is naked. And she has ribbons flowing, covering up, you know, the
uh-huh.
special places. And
yes.
There's puzzle pieces flying around her. And then what it is it's called, you know, putting the pieces together, showing that vulnerability, but pulling those pieces together. And that is a direct reflection of, you know, going through that intense vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And then I incorporated that in. So there's where the lady comes from on the front cover of the book. And then the dragon and the Eskimo woman and the lion is fantasy. It's exposure to fantasy, to your thought, you know, don't fall prey to your own manipulation in a sense.
Exactly.
Because,
well, a lion is also strength.
Eskimo yes,
woman
yes.
is also what they call the mud mother, you know. And the dragon, really, it takes an awful lot, you know, for... I mean, those are very spiritual. They're fantasy, but they're also very spiritual. So it is interesting to me to see the cover because it is, to me, when I look at it, it embodies the words in the book, the courage that you took, you know, to take your life by the reins, you know, the courage that you took to face your inner demons, the courage that you took to actually put it, you know, pen to paper. And you're a very talented artist. And I can't say that enough. I think that your work is absolutely stunning. And I saw the lady in your Facebook photos, you know, so from when you first started sketching her until she had the ribbons flowing. So, you know, I know your work firsthand, and I think you are incredibly talented. But,
you know,
at a tween, I could never have told you that, you know, to where that you would have believed it. Your mother never, or your father never, or your brother never could have said that to you, to where you believed it, because you weren't in a place where you couldn't hear it, right?
Right, exactly.
And,
exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, but now where you are, you're at the leading edge of helping other women who will hopefully help their children with this realization as well, so that our sons and daughters grow up to be leaders and not followers, and to be, you know, these strong, centered, you know, love-centered individuals. And what a great place the world would be, you know.
Right, wouldn't it?
When
these it really
kids
would.
Come to age, you know. And that's why I say this book actually is for everybody. It's not just for somebody who may be going through something. You know, you can get it, you can read it. If your teenagers are going through it, this will help you with your teenagers. If your young adult children are going through this will help them. If your, you know, kids in grade school are going through, these are tools that are very practical, they're very easy to follow, and if you make the dedication, and you have to really, you know, and it is a dedication. You have to understand, people have to understand that they are worthy of this moment and all of it, you know.
Absolutely.
And once they understand that they are worthy of feeling good, that they're worthy of letting go of their emotional baggage, that they're worthy of whatever it is that they want to live, this book is the one that will help get them there. And, you know, set them on a new path. So it's an awesome book. I've read it. And it's like, what, 80 pages, I think?
It's about 125 pages, about 80 minus the process. The process
right.
is pretty lengthy. Yeah.
Yeah. And
but, you know, and the funny thing is that, you know, I was a self-help book guru. You know, I'd buy up every single one of them just to try to find something. And every
right.
time, you know, and I always said, you know, they never give me what I'm looking for. You know, I want a process.
Right.
I want something I can hold on to. And that's what I've done. I have given everything that has helped me, and step by step. And, you know, first I point out, of course, the realization this is we're doing this. We're doing this bluntly. And it is a very blunt book. But it has some compassion to it. It's what you need to know. It's not a whole lot of frill. Some of it's comical because you kind of say, well, yeah, I do that. But for most part, you know, it has substance that you can actually take and use every single aspect of every part of your day. And you can use and apply it, and, you know, it's got a little more than the affirmation. It's got, you know, it definitely takes a little bit of a different path than from what I've read and experienced, because I took and I made a hybrid, and I used business processes, which is, I don't think a whole lot of people have used that in the past for self-help, but...
I don't
life
know of
is
any,
a process.
Actually.
Yes, and people have to understand that life is a process. It's a process of learning and understanding. Everybody wants to know why we're here. We're here simply to be happy and to experience and to find that. And we should not be wasting our time looking for... why we need to validate our self-worth. We should throw that all those rules away, and we should find our happiness. We're entitled to that while still being compassionate and still finding that harmonious balance with others.
That's right. That's right. I've shared this story before. I don't know if I've ever shared it with you or not, but when my mom passed away, and then they resuscitated her, and I went to Florida, and I'm sitting with her. They had sent her home. She could either live her life on a ventilator or, you know, go home to die. And so she said, I'll go back on the vent until you gather all of my children because we're scattered everywhere. And so we got down there. They took her off the vent. I rode with her in the ambulance home, get her into bed, and her feet are just pitch black from lack of oxygen, so I'm rubbing her feet, trying to get some blood flow back in there. And I said to her, all right, Mom, you are probably the only person I'm ever going to be able to ask this question to. And I said, so what was it like when you died? And my mother was a surgical nurse for a number of years, and held her surgical license for 50 years before she finally retired it. And so my first thought is, before she even answered, is that, you know, she's probably looking at the paramedics and making sure they're doing their job right, you know, because they're, you know, young, and here she is with all this experience and, you know, whatnot. And she had said to me that she was aware that she was above her body and she could see that they were working on her. And I said, well, I said, you know, I've read, and I said, and when I was, you know, at that time, and I was very hot and heavy into hypnotherapy and regressions, and I said, is there the tunnel of light? Was there anybody to greet you? Did they tell you it wasn't your time? You know, all of these different stories that you hear and read. And she said, no. And she said, my first thought was, wow, did I get fat? And I that's what I did, but a whole lot louder. and I'm like, I said, Mom, you're in between worlds, and the first thought you have is that you got fat. And she said, yeah, believe it or not. And she said, then I had heard, you know, somebody speaking to me, telling me that I wasted a lot of my life on things that did not matter, like your weight, you know, your height, you're this, you're that, when the only reason that we are here is to find joy. And that's what it's all about. It's all about joy. And I cannot tell that story enough times for people to hear it and understand it. Because that really
that is the truth.
Not about making the money.
The
it's not about the house. It's not about the cars. It's not about keeping up with the whomevers. It's about doing things that make you happy. That's it. Period. End of story, you know? And it's been on October 18th. It was 6 years. So, you know, I've carried that with me. I carry that with me when, you know, if I am not in the mood, like if I'm not like, ooh, let me figure out what I'm gonna cook for dinner. I wait till I get in that. Ooh, let's have some dinner, you know, and then get really creative. Because as you know, when you make food and you're not in a good mood, what does it taste like?
Yeah, but I'm not really a good cook anyway, and
I'm really not.
I tried, actually, this past weekend, I tried to cook, because I'm like, I'm all motivated, and I'm like, I'm going to cook for the week, you know, and I have this cookbook, and it says, you know, freeze and prepare and be organized, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to be organized, you know,
that's right.
So I'm cooking this stuff, and of course, you know, I'm trying it as I go, and I got three things going in the oven, and you know, at different times, one coming out, and oh my gosh, I tell you what, they all tasted like crap. They really did. And, you know,
right.
I just, I was just like, you know what?
Because energy has to go somewhere. And if
but
you're
you know
angry
what?
When you're cooking, and even if you're confused when you're cooking, you'll taste the confusion in your cooking.
That's probably what I had. But you know what? It was so much fun. It was so much fun, it didn't matter how it tasted. It really didn't. And I did. I threw it out. And I said, okay, what do you guys want now? You know, because it was just like, I was creating this stuff and putting it in. That is, and that's what this is about. It's about living in the moment. You get to stop and smell the roses, right?
Exactly.
It's that if you're so busy thinking about something, you just miss something else. And that is a big part of the book, too, that, you know, if you're in a relationship and you're so fixated on certain things that you miss those hints of true affection. And, you know, that is so important. I mean, you know, to be able to see that in a way that someone else is able to communicate. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, that my husband or my boyfriend, he's so disconnected from me. He doesn't have any emotional attachment. Or he doesn't understand how to be emotional, and we can't connect like that. And I've heard so many people say that.
Right.
Well, it's not about that. Yeah. It's about listen. It's stay now. Don't take anything personal from what's going on, and watch, because I guarantee you that person is showing you love. You're just not seeing it.
Right.
Because it's not communicated in the normal society form.
Right, or what your expectation is. And your expectation, you know, we grew up with Cinderella, you know, and there is no such thing, you know. And, well, there can be, you know, but it's even, for me, it's even though the other person is not in a way that's pleasing to me, I appreciate them anyway.
Right.
And they get that, they pick up on that, and you know, and who's to say I'm the queen of how they're behaving? It's their behavior, you know.
Right.
And I can either fight with it or just say, I'll talk with you when you want to talk.
Right,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah, because you can't control another individual. The only
exactly.
thing you can control
Never.
Is yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, years ago, early on, we had been married 5 years, and all of a sudden, all I could do was blink, and I would hear about every wrongdoing that I had ever done since the dawn of time. And one day, I just busted a gut laughing, and he was not really thrilled that I found humor in that. And I said, well, look, I said, I'm really sorry for you, because you are the one that has been holding on to that for however long you've been holding on to, and all you had to do was say something way back then. I can't even remember way back then, you know, and here I am,
exactly.
La-di-da, going on with my life, not knowing that there's some, you know, minor or major thing that I've done to upset you because you've never told me. So it's not fair to me. And I said, the person I feel really sorry for is you. I said, so from now on, if I do something, let me know right then and there, you know,
right.
Because
people are afraid to do that, though.
Pardon me?
People are afraid to do that.
I don't
have
know why.
I don't know why either, because it's a liberating thing to be able to really say, I mean, within reason, you know, I mean, you don't go and tell your boss to go fly a kite or something, but you really want to say that. I mean, you can do it in a way that allows you to find peace within yourself, to get it out in the right words.
Right.
You know, but
right.
I have probably, I would say, a half a dozen people that are just in my current environment that, you know, that's a constant thing. They can't truly tell somebody how they're truly feeling in fear, but that other person's going to get mad at them. But you have to allow somebody to get mad at you, but then you also have to know that you didn't do anything wrong, or if you did do something wrong, that you're taking ownership for that and apologizing, or, you know.
Exactly.
But you're not holding on to it.
Right, you can't control the other person's outcome ever. You know,
right.
You can say whatever you want to somebody. How they hear what you're saying is based on them and their past experiences. No matter how it's said, it can be said
right.
with the most love and understanding, you know, or it can be said
exactly.
as sarcastically. And the truth of the matter is, it's the person on the receiving end, how they respond to what they're hearing. So,
and that is self-thought abuse on their end. So
right.
all that self-thought abuse, and it's almost like an epidemic. And when you realize somebody who, you know, is committing self-thought abuse, after you read this book, you can actually literally, you know, kind of walk around and go, oh, my gosh. I didn't
mm-hmm.
realize how bad this is. Like, wow,
mm-hmm.
you see it on Facebook, you see it on the news, and you're like,
mm-hmm.
people, you have got to stop this, because we're going to be so deluded in these negative thoughts that nobody's going to be able to stand back up on their own 2 feet, because nobody's going to be guiding and leading the way.
That's right. That's why, you know what, I tend to stay off of Facebook lately, and I'm more on Twitter, you know, and it's 140 characters or less, and it's usually very positive. I'm not a news person. If there's something, you know, really catastrophic, somebody
mm-hmm.
will make sure I need to either go outside and say, yep, I'm ready, let's go, or, you know, prepare. Otherwise, it's when you realize that all of the media is owned by 5 people, then it's not
right.
really media. It's
our children. Our children are
people.
Right. Well, our children, the college students, the military, they're all on that. They're all feeding off of that information,
mm-hmm.
and they're believing what they're reading because they don't go out in front of somebody face to face anymore. That social
mm-hmm.
media has really actually caused more self-thought abuse because they're sitting there alone with their own thoughts. After
right.
reacting to something that's written. So
exactly.
it's actually worse than when I was younger or in my teens. If I would have grown up in the way that society is today and had that event happen to me, I don't know that I would have rebounded, because I probably wouldn't have left my house and probably would have tweeted it or put it on Facebook how miserable I am, or
right.
doing selfies, or, hey, look at me, give me some attention. And as I'm sitting there, I'm feeling worse and worse and worse instead of going out and saying, hey, let me be
mm-hmm.
a part of life. And,
well,
you know,
with hypnotherapy or self-hypnosis, you watch TV to relax. You go to your computer and check on Facebook to relax. And what happens is, in that relaxed state of mind, depending on where you sit in your own personal experience, you are susceptible to all of that gunk coming in and affecting you in ways that you don't even know. And
right.
And that helps create that self-thought abuse. And, you know, Einstein referred to the television as a stupid box. And there was just an article out, one of these days I actually have posted it several times on Twitter, on the science behind television and all of the subliminal messages that come through. And the best thing people can do is turn it off. You know, I have
exactly
3 hours of television that I watch, and I will DVR it so I can zippity-doo-dah through commercials so I don't have to watch those. I don't like being force-fed. There was a news station in Detroit, Michigan, that wanted to know why a CVS and a Walgreens were going on each, you know, there were just so many of them popping up, and they're always like right across the street or kitty corner from one another. And they had done an experiment, and this was an experiment for an antidepressant, and this goes back to like 1999, Aubrey. So, and I think that it wasn't Prozac, but it was another one. And it was these little thought bubbles, and the little thought bubble would, you know, say, do you ever feel like alone at a party? Do you ever, you know, withhold yourself from going into a crowd? And, you know, and there's music playing behind it. And here you
right,
are in
right,
a relaxed
I remember
mood.
Those.
Now you have to read it, right? That
yep.
gets into your subconscious so quickly that what they found out is that one test market, okay? One test market, every time that particular antidepressant commercial aired, 100 new prescriptions were written. That is how powerful the media is. You know,
yeah,
back when McDonald's was supersizing everything and everybody was supersizing everything, you know, it's like, stop. Turn off
right,
the television.
Right.
Don't watch. Don't watch the news. If you're going to engage in conversation, there's so many other things, you know, to talk about. You know, you can talk
right.
about ideas and ideals and where you're going and what you'd want to accomplish when you get there and, you know, how beautiful fall is and, oh, check out the lights and, you know, those types of things. There's so many different things that you can talk. You can read a book, you know.
Right.
Anything.
Exactly.
But turn off the television, turn off the computer, you know, get away from those types of things that cause that self-hypnosis that people experience when
right.
they are either A, watching television, or B, you know, on Facebook. And and my time on Facebook is much less and less and less and less, as you know. So,
yeah. Well,
right,
the other thing.
People buy your book, babe? We got 90 seconds. I don't want to make sure that we can get everything
all
in.
Right.
I didn't mean to cut
you
off there.
It's okay. You can buy it on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, and there's multiple other sites you can purchase it on as well. Those are the two major. And you can also purchase my book on selfthoughtabuse.com, all three. And Amazon offers an ebook, and I believe Barnes & Noble's as well, but don't quote me on that one. I think it's just
mm-hmm.
Amazon at this point. So,
yeah, I got mine. I have an ebook, and I read it on my phone. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's a very quick read. It's a very intriguing read. You bring up an awful lot of points that I think today's parents really need this book. Today's parents need this book not only for themselves, but I think they need it for their children. And I would love to see every household, you know, in the world, actually, if you can get it translated into other languages, but at least start with America. Everybody in America needs this book in order to understand what it is that they've caused for themselves, take responsibility for themselves, and then have a new way to assist their children with what their children are going through. Thank you so much for being
my guest,
Aubrey.
No problem. Have a great night.
Thank you. I will. And again, Aubrey Simmons, Self-Thought Abuse, and you can visit her online at selfthoughtabuse.com. Get the book at barnesandnoble.com and amazon.com, and Twitter is @thoughtabuse. So check her out there as well. Obs, you have a great night, all right? Thanks so much. I appreciate you.
You too.
All right, darling.
All right.
Take care. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.